The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
One of the first Hollywood summer blockbuster movies is out, and it is big. No, I mean really big. It's the latest version of Godzilla. On this edition of UWM Today, we take a look at the deeper meaning of this cult classic. Joining us in the studio is Jason Jones, Assistant Professor of Japanese in the Foreign Languages and Literature Department at UWM. Jason has studied Japanese culture closely over the years, and in fact, he's writing a book that examines the meaning of Godzilla, what it stands for, and why this cultural icon has fascinated so many people around the world for so many years. Welcome, Jason. Great to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
I have to admit, I have not seen this latest version of Godzilla, but I'm really looking forward to it for a couple of reasons. First of all, it is Godzilla.
It's Godzilla.
We have to see this. And also, Jim Riegel, a former film student at UWM, is the fellow who supervised all the special effects.
That's so, correct, yes.
So there's another strong UWM connection there. Well, talk about your attraction or fascination with this icon, this thing.
Well, you know, who couldn't be fascinated with Godzilla? I think I began watching Godzilla films when I was a child. You know, they would just, you turn on the television and there would be this very campy, you know, sort of monster fighting scene happening. And you know, I wanted to see it as a child. Of course, at that time, I wasn't really thinking of Godzilla as anything serious. I was just looking at the monsters fight. It was a spectacle, and it was fabulous. So that's what originally drew me in.
Especially late on a Friday night when you're probably 11 or 12 years old, right?
Exactly.
And it's on channel 69 or something like that.
it's funny how that stuff sort of sticks with you. You know, there were the Godzilla cartoons, right? There were a couple that came out. One of them, the earliest one, I think, was the Hanna-Barbera cartoon with Godzilla and Godzuki. So, and that was when I was a child. So I was watching cartoons. And so Godzilla became sort of a permanent part of my own identity, I suppose. And then I spent over a decade in Japan. You know, looking at part of my research is about how Hollywood imports Japanese film and remakes them or adapts them for an international audience, or at least a Hollywood audience, an American audience.
But at its heart, it really is a Japanese thing, isn't it? I mean, the very first Godzilla movie was done by a Japanese director.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Ishiro Honda in 1954 was when the original film came out. And the original film is very different from the more recent Godzillas, right? The 1998 version that everyone loves to hate with Matthew Broderick, and even this 2014 version. There's a sort of happiness in these more recent Hollywood versions of Godzilla that just simply does not exist in the original film.
What was the purpose in creating that first film? What was it that seemed to have connected so strongly, particularly with the Japanese people?
Well, the original film is sort of it's a means of catharsis, right? So it's 1954. It's about 9 years after, you know, World War II has ended. And, of course, Japan is still the only country to have experienced the direct use of nuclear weapons, right, on it. Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And also there was the firebombing of Tokyo, right? So you have this theme of almost endless destruction. And this is what the original Godzilla is about. It's this monster that can't be stopped, and it's threatening to drag Japan, this Japan that has really begun to climb out and is, you know, from under the ashes of war and is doing really well. Like, if you look at the original Godzilla, you can see these icons of progress, right? They, you know, one of the chocolate companies, Morinaga Chocolate, you see them in the film, and Yukizirushi, you know, they make milk and dairy products, and you have a department store called Isetan. So all of these are these sort of entities that have risen from the ashes of the war. And what Godzilla does, the big threat of Godzilla, it's not simply the physical threat, right?
Stepping on cars or knocking over buildings.
Right, right. It's what that represents. And it represents being dragged back into the destruction of the past. It's not over. We thought it was over, and it isn't.
For the Japanese person living in that era, though, in 1954, with these terrible, terrible images of Hiroshima and the in the wake of this nuclear disaster, you would think that the people would want to get as far away from anything more destructive, and yet they embrace this movie.
Well, you know, you have to work things out, right? You know, there isn't always room for either direct criticism of an experience, or sometimes you just don't, you're not sure yet how to handle a difficult experience. And I think that holds for all of us, whether it's the death of a loved one, or your hopes are dashed for whatever reason. You know, it might take you years in order to sort of process this and to move on. And, you know, Godzilla certainly represents a sort of continuation of trying to move on, trying to understand, and trying to move into the future as well.
A catharsis.
Exactly.
So did the Godzilla phenomenon back in 54, I think I saw that movie translated when I was a young boy, but mm-hmm. but remind me of the progression of this wonderful franchise, I guess we call the Godzilla. Mm-hmm. There have been now 30, 31 films that have grown from that first one that started back in 1954. Mm-hmm. Did the Japanese produce more Godzillas? Were they the only ones doing Godzilla movies back in the 50s and 60s?
Well, you know, that's actually tricky. Yes, the original Godzilla came out in 1954, but there was a U.S. remake of that film that came out in 1956. That starred Raymond Burr. So if you remember Perry Mason, you know, I can never erase that from my mind. Every time I see, you know, Raymond Burr in the Godzilla film, I think, oh, it's Perry Mason.
You expect Godzilla to be under cross-exam, right?
Exactly. so you have this 1956 version of the film, and the 1956 U.S. version is very different from the Japanese version, even though what this version does is it's... You know, how they made this remake is actually quite interesting. They used original footage, the footage from the original film, and they reshot some parts, whatever parts they wanted to add, and they, you know, created an entire film, basically through editing. So you would think that perhaps the heart of the film would be the same, but it's actually very different. There were lots of scenes, for example, that were silenced or parts that were left out or characters that were changed that removed the perspective from the Japan side to the U.S. and to the international side. And this is the importance of those the characters who are reporters, right? Raymond Burr plays a reporter in the film, and so the spectacle. We already know that he's okay because the film starts with him sort of narrating across this backdrop of destruction. So we know he lives. We know everything's okay. You know, but it really changes the perspective from the Japan side to the international side, and that's what the reporter does.
Did it remove the morality tale of destruction and aftermath of this terrible aftermath of a nuclear attack?
Yes, it definitely sort of, I would say, weakened those, the message of the film, we could say. So, for instance, Godzilla in the 1954 version, Godzilla's already big. It's not like, a nuclear experiment made him grow. He's already big. He's asleep in the layer of the earth that sort of contains all of the nature that would have been around during the Jurassic era, the Jurassic period, and it's the testing of atomic bombs, right, in the Pacific Ocean that creates a crack and therefore allows Godzilla to come out. So you have this criticism of what's something very important that's going on during that period, right? So the U.S. Is successful at creating the bomb, and so two are used over Japan, and this continues, right? Because then it becomes a race. Right? Other countries are trying to do this.
And a lot of testing. I remember the controversy mm-hmm. over the superpowers firing these things off like firecrackers, in a sense,
yes.
Seeing who could get a bigger one, right?
Exactly. And that's one of the things, right? First, people didn't really have a sense of this concept of fallout, right? It's who can make the biggest firecracker. So you're looking for the explosion, and there are some amazing explosions. And these things are televised, in the U.S. to show that, hey, we're making some progress here. And then this concept of fallout eventually becomes known by the public. But the 1956 remake sort of there are very few questions to ask. And this is one of the most important things of the original Godzilla and what I would like to – I would hope to believe the Godzilla franchise, even though it's not true across all of the films. It's about humans. Yeah, there's a monster. But why is the monster here? The monster is here because of what humans have done. So at the end of the film, it causes you to question – what's going on? Okay, what have humans done, and how are things going to progress? Because it's not a very hopeful ending. Right? It's not just that the monster's gone and yay. It's this monster's gone, but there could be others, right? Depending on what humans do. And that sort of message is gone from the 1956 version.
Yeah, but in today it seems to have come back, though, doesn't it?
I don't want to give I don't want to give away the
Too
film.
Much.
Yeah, right. I guess to a certain extent, there are still, of course, issues of nuclear weapons proliferation, and of course, with Japan, one of the most significant issues is how do we move ahead in terms of energy, right? In terms of resources, with the Fukushima nuclear power plant,
disaster, the leakage that occurred a couple of years ago with
exactly.
the terrible earthquake, a sea coast town with a radioactive power plant that is now today still incredibly vulnerable, or
yes.
that area incredibly vulnerable as a result of the leak.
Right. The plant was heavily damaged, and it's not going to be – it's not an instant fix. So these issues are still very important today. Now, whether or not the new film tries to address these issues, I guess I have my own thoughts about that, but I won't say. But I think as the audience goes and sees this film, it's a fantastic spectacle. You're going to enjoy it. But maybe, you can ask yourself, well, okay, what is this film – what is this film asking me? There is a presence of nuclear power, and so maybe you can derive from that some kinds of inquiry, right? Some kinds of questioning. But whether or not it's as deep as that original film is sort of a different story altogether, I think.
Jason is doing a terrific job of not spoiling the ending for all of us who have not yet seen this movie. You are listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Jason Jones. Jason is an assistant professor of Japanese in the Foreign Language and Literature Department at UWM. And one of the areas of research that Jason has been involved in over the years is looking at this cultural icon, Godzilla. Of course, the big movie out this year, the big blockbuster that seems to be doing well. I mentioned earlier in the program that we have another really strong UWM connection to that film. Jim Regal, who is the fellow who oversees all the special effects in that movie, is a UWM grad, actually, and actually won several Academy Awards for his work on Lord of the Rings, on the trilogy. So it's very fitting that that we're devoting a little time this week to this film that he worked on. And Jason, of course, as we mentioned, has done a lot of extensive study on what this being, this creation, Godzilla, this imaginary, we think imaginary, we hope imaginary character, says about society, and particularly, I guess, the Japanese society that mm-hmm. Jason has spent so much time studying. Jason, you talk about the fact that the film series, and you know there are now, what, 30, 31 Godzilla movies. It all started back in the early 50s in Japan. How has this spread around the rest of the world? Have other countries, have other filmmakers besides the American Hollywood factory, have others taken on the challenge of trying to create a bigger, better, meaner Godzilla?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure, if every film studio, you know, across in countries across the world have tried to take on Godzilla. You know, certainly Godzilla exists as a presence. You know, Godzilla is extraordinarily versatile. He's sort of timeless. You know, in the U.S., for example, you get lots of Godzilla references across various forms of media. If you've ever seen The Simpsons Hollywood specials, Halloween specials, there's one Treehouse of Horror episode where Lard Lad and all of the mascots come to life. And when Lard Lad comes to life, he yells. He has this Godzilla yell. Right, there's an episode of Bob's Burgers where Tina has this dinosaur tattoo, and when they show it, it's also the Godzilla yell. Now, this is one of those things that does make Godzilla, I think, this timeless character, a character that you instantly recognize, and I think this helps sort of propagate the Godzilla fandom across the world. You could play that Godzilla yell, you know, in lots of places, and people would have no problem telling you, that's Godzilla, right?
You're writing a book about this.
Yes.
Tell us about that venture.
Well, I look very critically on the Godzilla series and, what has happened throughout the process of bringing Godzilla to Hollywood as a means of making Godzilla, I suppose, an international icon, even more so rather than simply a local icon. Godzilla loses a lot of, most of that original meaning through turning him into an item of popular culture. And so I'm looking at the process through which this has happened. How Godzilla was became separated from that original narrative of wartime destruction and human self-inquiry, and became simply a character that doesn't necessarily always, drag you back into those issues of self-inquiry and questioning and doubt. And
so becoming more pure eye candy and less of a philosophical story of, yes. Of existence?
Yes, yes. More eye candy, more, yeah, more just Godzilla the character, which is, I mean, Godzilla the character is extraordinarily appealing. I mean, that's probably why most of us go to see the Godzilla films. We're not necessarily thinking of the narrative. We're thinking, I want to see Godzilla step on buildings and, you know, or fight other monsters or whatever you're going
for. It's a popcorn movie, right? It's a Saturday afternoon complete escape.
Exactly. You're going for the spectacle, right? But again, I look at this very critically and, you know, I would like to be able to reconnect that original Godzilla narrative and the Godzilla character. And I think it's a fabulous time to do that. I mean, you have... So next year you will have what I believe is the, 70th anniversary of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This year you have the 60th anniversary of Godzilla, right, of the original Godzilla release. And again, you still have these issues of nuclear weapons proliferation and nuclear energy. What are we going to do there? All these questions remaining. And I think... This is the importance of Godzilla. I mean, very rarely do you have this item, this very popular item, who has the potential, to make us think. It doesn't just have to be a spectacle. You know, we can think about our progress as human beings and try to answer these difficult questions going forward. So let's do something... let's do something with this character. You know, let's not just go for the spectacle, but let's ask something, you know, of ourselves as we're watching the spectacle.
You know, you talk about how the Japanese reacted to this back in the 50s, where war was so fresh in their memory. And now, 60 years later, it is the eye candy. You know, that mm-hmm. tends to be, you know, I brought in a Chicago Tribune a couple of weeks ago, just as Godzilla came out, did its summary of the 30 different films that have been in this series, and they had a couple of one-liners for each one of them, mm. and you know, Godzilla versus Biollante, underrated, perhaps depressingly dark Venus flytrap horror hybrid, the son of Godzilla, cute, kid-friendly, Saturday morning charm, Godzilla knows best.
Yeah, I mean,
it did a really wonderful job of noting that different producers,
different directors
have come and taken this wonderful figure mm-hmm. that is somehow embedded in our DNA, I guess, from mm-hmm. the time we you know, are in pajamas and can begin to focus on the TV screen. It does a wonderful job of saying that there's almost a Godzilla for every taste.
Yes, a Godzilla for every taste, and I suppose a Godzilla for every period, right? You know, you imagine that once Japan has started experiencing this amazing economic growth, well, then the future becomes important. Right? And you would like to spend less time, reviewing and thinking about...
Looking backwards,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And the 1954 original, look backwards.
Look backwards and be fearful. And then pretty much anything with verses in it, that's a new era of Godzilla, you know, from something like Godzilla versus King Kong. You know, that original message or that message that's in the original film, it's no longer as pronounced as it was, if it's there at all.
I suppose one of the downsides, if you think about where we are today, is that if we squeeze out entirely that memory or that meaning of this movie monster figure representing the horror of what Japan went through, then we become at risk of not learning from that history.
This is true, and you know, again, one of the special things about Godzilla, it's yes, there were horrors specific to Japan, but it's not, I'd say, not just the horrors experienced by Japan. You know, certainly, yes, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, those were experienced by Japan. Tokyo's firebombing, yes. But it's the potential for humans to either create or destroy. It's the applications that we choose for the technologies that we develop, which is also a very important issue in the original. You have Dr. Serizawa, who is wondering, okay, do I use my secret weapon, this oxygen destroyer? But I don't want this to be used for ill. Therefore, I am going to I'm going to destroy all the blueprints, and I'm going to destroy the last remaining blueprint, which is in my head, and I am going to die with Godzilla.
How do Japanese today view Godzilla? Have you seen how this latest movie has played in the Japanese market?
Well, I was reading a couple of reports in Japan, and they were discussing the lower half of Godzilla, saying that Godzilla had gained a little bit of weight. it's, you know, Godzilla is tricky even in Japan. I would say that many people are not – they haven't seen the original Godzilla, and they have no idea that the original Godzilla had this sort of intensity to it, this meaning.
Interesting. So even though it started there mm-hmm. today are contemporary Japanese who don't get it, who haven't made that connection.
I would say most people have not made that connection. When you're looking at the more recent generations, why would you watch a black and white film made in 1954?
You teach Japanese, the language, at UWM. You talk about the culture. Do you use Godzilla in your classroom?
Oh, yes. All the time. I teach Japanese language. I also teach Japanese popular culture, and I teach a Japanese film course in film studies. And the students love to see these Godzilla films. And I find it extraordinarily interesting because you can see the students light up. You know, you're talking about things that they never even thought about, right? Maybe many of them have never seen the original Godzilla and never would have imagined that something that perhaps here has been described as this campy monster flick could have such deep meaning.
So you get beyond the eye candy and get a little bit deeper.
We go for depth.
Wonderful, wonderful. So your book, when is it out?
Well, I'm hoping to get it out next year. It's still a work in progress. And I'm having a great time, working on it. And hopefully, in the meanwhile, I talk about Godzilla. I go to conventions and conferences, and so it's, people have been asking me. People have been saying, "When is it going to be out? I want to buy your book," which is a fabulous feeling.
So, Jason, based on the track record, there now are 31 Godzilla movies. Mm-hmm. I think the odds are pretty good that when your book comes out, there's likely to be a 32nd that will be close to your publication date.
Well, it's got to be sooner than that.
We'll hold you to that. We'll bring you back when it's out. We'll come back and we'll see what kind of trouble Godzilla has gotten in since then.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Jason Jones,
Assistant Professor of Japanese and Japanese Culture in the Foreign Languages and Literature Department at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.